Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Once Upon a Galactic Time by N.D. Shar, narrated by Abby Craden. Chapter 1. I can't stop shaking. They left me to sit on my own in one of the examination rooms. I have no idea who'll come to speak to me next, or what they might threaten me with. But one thing is for certain. I'm scared of what these people might do. The doctor who checked me over was civil enough, even though she kept mostly silent. The scrubs she gave me to wear feel like sandpaper. Barefoot, I long for fatigues, socks, and my combat boots. A weapon would be nice, too. I clench my fist to control another shiver. Doesn't work. Stay calm, Red. Yeah, that's easier said than done. Freezing cold in this room, and I assume it's all on purpose. Bare concrete walls. No window. I'm very careful not to stare directly at the surveillance camera on the ceiling. I don't want them to detect fear in my eyes, and I don't trust myself to be able to hide it. Fuck. Being thrown in the brig was bad enough to begin with, but I never thought they'd put me under. As the memory rises, causing me to miss a breath, I visualize the Colorado mountains of my childhood and the forest trails I love to run. Whatever it takes. If I allow myself to feel even a portion of the terror and rage I experienced when they restrained me and pumped that drug into me, I might lose it completely. Sure, they brought me right back again. But it doesn't matter. I didn't know they would. They never shared their plans, or that it was just a mock exercise. Having all options taken away, being drugged into a full coma, every second of the ordeal was real for me. It was much worse than any SEER training I've ever done or could imagine putting new recruits through. Panic rising, and I swallow hard. For God's sake, don't think about this stuff. So intensely focused do I become on visualizing every inch of the running trails back at home and staying in control that I don't even hear the door open.
Commander Redfield?
He's tall, dark-haired, brown-eyed, with a tiny white scar running through his left eyebrow. I'm sure I've never seen him around before. The fact he's not in uniform worries me. Now that I know what these guys are capable of, I've lost all trust in the chain of command. What other nasty surprises have they got in store for me? I struggle to remember what I'm supposed to say, or even if I should speak. Sir, I just nod. My voice comes out raw, wishing I didn't sound so broken, but I can't bring myself to really care. I don't think I'll be able to pretend much anyway. Whatever happens now, they got to me with that sick stunt and they must be aware of it. Meanwhile, he places a bunch of folded clothes on the table in front and takes a step back.
These are for you. Please let me know when you're ready. I'll be right outside.
He's gone again before I can answer. And for a moment, I just stare dumbfounded at the door. Please? Been a while since I heard that word. Life at the detention center is the sort of harsh that makes even Special Forces selection feel like a kid's holiday. Eager for answers, whatever I can get, I slide off the table. The room instantly starts to spin. Damn! Gripping the sides, I breathe through it. It gets better. Putting on fresh fatigues feels good, too. They delivered the thick socks I wanted, and brand new boots to go with them. I do hope they wouldn't give me this sort of gear if they were just planning to terminate me.
Please follow me, Commander.
My escort is not only polite with me, but almost deferential in his demeanor as he leads the way. Under less threatening or challenging circumstances, I would never be so obedient. I'd ask for his goddamn name, for starters. And to know what the hell is going on. Right now, though, simply putting one foot in front of the other without losing my balance requires all my strength and attention. To my relief, we don't have far to go.
Here we are,
he soon announces, and with a smile that I do not trust nor return, he ushers me into a plush office where three other people are waiting. The second we arrive, everyone goes eerily quiet, and they all turn to stare at me. In reaction, I resist the urge to glance over my shoulder. Hey, don't get me wrong.
as a decorated officer of the Navy's SOCOG, the Special Operations Command Group. I'm fairly used to all kinds of people snapping to attention when I walk into a room. But this is of a different order of magnitude, and I would never expect it here. Camp Grey Wolf is a Grade 3 military prison. Any respect, medals, and whatever else I earned through my years of service doesn't count for shit in this place. Just in case I had any illusions as to how not special I really am, they made it extremely clear with the recent exercise. Was it a game? Some hazing gone out of hand? The wrong person? Or was I supposed to serve as an example? As if recognizing my confusion, one of the people present steps forward.
Commander Redfield, it's an honor to meet you.
He's built like a competitive swimmer, with silver hair that betrays his age, despite a still very black mustache. Not carrying a concealed weapon on his person, as far as I can tell.
I'm James Hennison,
he adds.
Current CEO of the Ethan Murr Foundation.
So fucking what? I do not shake the hand he offers, or even nod in recognition. Truth is, my own shaking is still going on, and keeping my teeth from rattling is a full-time job. There's one other thing as well. In the short time it took to walk to this room, one particular feeling has taken hold of me. It's the urge to run. I need some air, and I want out. Out of this place. Out of my Navy role. Out of a system I'd have given my life to defend, but which I feel has betrayed me. I am furious, and D-O-N-E with it all. But this man just points to the other guy, the one who got me the clothes, as if my reaction were entirely natural.
This is Kevin Williams, my research assistant, and...
Where's Admiral Bragg? I cut him.
Oh, the Navy is not involved in this anymore,
he replies. My jaw drops at that answer, but he doesn't seem to notice and just carries on with the introductions.
Here are medical specialists, psychologist Dr. Amber Fox, and field surgeon Lieutenant Kira Jones.
The blonde-haired lieutenant is the one who examined me earlier. She was not armed then, but now I clock an automatic pistol and a holster on her belt. She looks like she could use it. The psychologist in her 50s gives me a friendly wave, like we've just met at a party or something. Frankly, I am amazed. How did this group manage to get rid of Warden Bragg? And how can any of this not be relevant to the Navy? One thing Hennison just said makes me suspicious as well, and a rush of anger brings welcome strength back into my legs.
Is that what you people are?
What do you mean, Commander?
A psy-op team,
I snap as I try to piece it together.
You put me through that fake sentence as an evaluation?
In recent years, scientists have perfected a way to effectively pause time for human beings. They figured out how to induce a state of biological hibernation, mainly to allow for the repair of lethal injuries. One of these days, the technique may be good enough to facilitate space travel to Mars, still in its infancy, and to other planets in the galaxy. The Murr Foundation, pioneer of new technologies and innovation, have been looking into this. It's exciting stuff, and I'm all for it. Sadly, as with so many other groundbreaking discoveries, other groups soon found a way to exploit its darker side. For instance, prisons are expensive to run, right? For the state of California alone, annual costs rise into the billions of dollars. If inmates are in stasis, though, that drops to virtually nothing. So, why not? In a total breach of prisoners' human rights, hasty experiments were run, sentences delivered, and countless lives put on hold. That's the term they use for it. Put on hold. I despise it, and everything to do with that process. Needless to say, the military also began their own trials into the technique. Q1 unlucky Navy commander, landing myself at Grey Wolf for a 3 months stint. Sore if I'd not been out drinking with my guys. If I'd not punched a superior officer in the face during a stupid brawl, it wouldn't have happened. But Grey Wolf is like a rite of passage for us, and I was kind of due a stay. It was to be a normal sentence. For sure, no one was going to put me to sleep for the duration. I did not volunteer for any tests or secret programs either. Looking at the people in front of me now, I wonder what organization they really work for. My voice rises along with a healthy dose of fury.
This was a fucking test?
Hennison looks mildly displeased at my choice of language, my reaction, or both. Too bad. I've not even started tearing into him yet.
Commander, please. This is really not what you think.
Tell me the truth, then. I was strapped down to a table and drugged, had my consciousness switched off against my will. I demand to know who you are. Now!
I told you the truth. We...
No! I growl. The Mer Foundation doesn't force tests on naval officers without their permission.
That's right, Commander. And we didn't.
Bullshit!
I understand you're upset, but you need to calm down.
I cannot stand people not being straight with me. Order me to calm down, and I'm genetically wired to do the opposite. We are off to a bad start, he and I, and that's even before his assistant tries to move me toward the couch.
Keep your hands off me!
I don't know I'm going to punch him until I do, but as my fist lands squarely in his face, he groans in pain, and my instincts take over. I start swinging. Williams goes down, clutching at the nose I might have just broken.
You'd think Hennison would get the point, but no. Commander.
He decides to grab my arm. Bad idea. What part of hands off is not clear. I immediately flip his hold, twist his wrist, and put him down in a single move. My heart is pounding out of my chest.
I've got to get out of here.
The psychologist actually throws herself over the couch in her haste to get out of my way. Clever woman. Unfortunately, I'm not the only one who can move fast. Inches from the door, a sharp sting on the side of my neck stops me dead in my tracks.
What the fuck?
I whip my head aside to find a gun right in my face. The one holding it is cool and steady Lieutenant Jones.
Oh, shit. Forgot about her.
Rookie mistake. It's okay, Commander, she says. No one's going to hurt you. Funny thing for her to tell me, considering our respective positions. Her voice is surprisingly warm and soothing, though, as if she's sorry this is happening. I press a hand to my neck, find a spot of blood on my fingers when I pull back.
What did you do?
I hiss at her. Just a mild sedative, she promises. Whatever she injected me with is already making my vision swim.
Don't,
I warn as she steps closer. Of course, at this stage, mine are all empty threats. It's okay, she repeats. Relax. It looks like she reholsters her weapon, but I can't be sure anymore. Someone is there to catch me as my legs fail. Hennison speaks. He sounds very far away.
Lay her on the couch.
Someone else is holding my hand. Progress, albeit puzzling. All I got before was a metal gurney, rough guards, and cuffs. The last thing I'm aware of before darkness closes in is a gentle voice I haven't heard before. Don't worry, sweetie. You're safe with us. Chapter 2. I wake up a few minutes later with a lingering headache. Things are quite different then. The psychologist has obviously been put in charge of things, and perhaps if they'd started this way, I may have been less inclined to throw punches. Dr. Fox gets me a cup of coffee, wraps me up in a warm blanket, and calls me sweetie. Ask any of the men in my unit, and they will tell you what a ruthless fighter I actually am. I don't do fluffy and sweet. I don't hold much love for shrinks either. But as it turns out, I'm no match for this woman in my current state. I let her do what she does, and even take comfort in her gentleness. William sits on the other couch with a bandage over his bloody nose and two black eyes. He's not getting the same treatment or attention, but at least Jones patched him up a bit. He was very decent with me earlier, and I don't like hurting good guys. He seems like one.
Sorry about that, I mutter. Apology accepted,
he grunts in return. Fox beams at us both as if we were her children.
How are you feeling, Commander?
She asks. I gather from the lack of sweetie involved that we might get back to business soon. I certainly hope so.
Warmer. Thanks for the coffee.
Good, good. You'll be fine.
But I still need answers.
My voice is threatening enough to make Hennison butt in uninvited.
Trust me, we look forward to filling you in, Commander,
he informs me.
I'll just go through the necessary checks with her first of all,
Fox points out in a warning tone, before softening when she turns back to me.
It's for your own well-being.
I trust that's okay with you?
I have no idea what she means, but to be perfectly honest, I'm exhausted, finally. I reasoned that if these people were going to hurt me, they would have done it by now. At least, I assume so. Go ahead, I tell her, and she wastes no time.
Could you confirm your name, rank, ID number, date, and place of birth for me, please?
That's hardly classified information, but yeah, whatever. My name is Storm Redfield, Commander of Special Forces, United States Navy. ID number AD28082-1. Born July 19th, 2057, in Denver, Colorado. I clearly see Jones bite on her lip as I finish. Both Hennison and Williams are also staring intensely at me. It's just like when I first walked into the room. All three of them appear transfixed.
Thank you,
Fox smiles before I get a chance to ask what's so fascinating about my details.
Can you think back to when Lieutenant Jones examined you earlier?
Yes.
Talk about what happened before that.
I don't like being made to recall that stuff. I do comply in the spirit of getting this interrogation over and done quickly, and having my own questions answered. The warden called me into his office to tell me I was going to be... I choke on the words. Damn it.
No rush,
Fox assures me. I tell her the rest through gritted teeth. Admiral Bragg said he had orders to put me on hold for a period of time. They got me in cuffs, wrists, and ankles, and took me down to the holding center. I thought it was a joke. Until the last second, I was certain they'd stop. With another strong shiver, I remind myself once again that although they did not stop, they did actually bring me back right away. I'm here now, alive, and able to function. Next thing I know, they've got me back in the infirmary, and she's with me. Jones nods as I glance at her. Right, Hennison says. So, I snap, what was the purpose of putting me under? To demonstrate that no one's safe from the sentence regardless of rank and accomplishments, or something else? What?
We really don't know, Commander,
Hennison assures me again.
But I can't imagine how terrifying the experience would be, and I'm sorry you had to go through it.
This time it occurs to me that he looks sad, and I wonder if that's genuine. If only I weren't still so cold, it would be easier to concentrate. As I tighten the blanket around me, Fox carries on, as if the interruption did not occur.
When did this all happen? She asks.
Earlier today, as you well know.
She gives me a soothing smile.
Almost done. Can you confirm the date?
October 7th, 2086. And yeah, we're done. You need to fill me in because nothing adds up for me right now. Who are you and what's going on?
I don't like to plead, but the more I try to make sense of the situation, the more holes appear in it. Fox takes my hand again.
I'm fine, I growl.
All right,
she says and releases me. Everyone else remains quiet. I see reluctance on their faces. Dismay, compassion. And all of a sudden, I know what this is about without needing to be told. Oh, fuck. I look to Fox.
They didn't bring me right back out, did they? I murmur.
She softly shakes her head.
No, I have to say it again. They didn't. They kept me in stasis.
I'm sorry, Commander,
Fox says. I glance at each of the others in turn. Hennison looks solemn, but also relieved, as if he's mighty glad we reached this point. Jones nods in encouragement. Williams manages to flash me a warm smile, busted nose and all. Meanwhile, I feel strangely clear and empty.
All right, I tell them. I'm ready. Fill me in now.
Hennison clears his throat and looks me in the eye.
Commander Redfield, you spent a long time unconscious. Today's date is May 7th. The year is 2217.
Throughout my Navy career, I received and delivered my share of bad news. I know people react in different ways. Fox is watching me, ready for anything probably, but I offer no reaction. Truth is, I feel nothing. Actually, correction. I feel like I always do when I'm about to take a sniper shot. Hyper-aware. Detached, but incredibly focused. In the zone. I don't know the psychologist took my hand again, but she'll say later that I was squeezing her fingers so hard she thought I might break them. Trooper that she is. She never said anything. The year is 2217, I repeat. 2217. Yes, Hennison confirms. Indeed. I've been asleep for 131 years.
That's right, Commander, Jones chimes in. Don't worry, though. It looks like you were in peak condition at the time, and you still are now. The hibernation process actually worked very well for you.
Well, I'm not sure about that, and I don't like the sound of it. It actually worked well for you, as in not for some others.
The group are serious, I see. I blink just once and shake my head.
You've got to be kidding me. But I don't even try that. I don't say it. I don't attempt to bargain with them to give me a different answer. I know it's true. I can feel it in my bones. Those bastards put me down and kept me asleep for more than a century. God damn it! I roar and jump to my feet.
Sweetheart! Fox exclaims in alarm. Commander!
Jones is the one who gets it. Before anyone else moves, she grabs my arm and drags me out with her. In here, she says, pointing at a different door. I go at it with both hands raised, expecting it to swing open. It slides smoothly to the side instead, causing me to fall forward. Still, I land on my knees in front of the toilet I require, in perfect timing, as my stomach turns inside out. For the next minute, at least, I throw up everything I've got. It's mainly bile. No fucking wonder.
Okay, Jones inquires as I finally stop.
Didn't know she was still there.
No,
I groan.
Come on, she says, her tone full of sympathy. But I shake her off as she helps me to my feet and hit the wall in a surge of rage.
Suddenly, I can't stop. Once, twice, three times. No longer cold, but boiling in anger, I punch that wall as if it were a living thing I'm trying to kill. In my mind's eye, I see Admiral Bragg. Motherfucker! I scream. You fucking bastard! I punctuate each word with a vicious hit, each more brutal than the last. The wall doesn't dent. It just gives me pain, which is exactly what I need to feel right now. All my emotions, present fury included, have to flow out of my system, and this is it, right here. Jones must understand that, as a soldier that she also is, since she doesn't attempt to stand in my way. She allows me to hit again and again, until skin breaks on my knuckles and blood starts to appear, until my voice falters and my furious shouts go weak to turn into sobs of sorrow. Only then does she slap both hands on the back of my shoulders and pivot me around to face the sink.
Time to cool off, Commander.
She sticks my head under, keeping one hand lightly on the back of my neck for support. The water feels amazing, and I'm grateful for her steadying touch. When she moves off, I rinse my mouth, splash a bit more water on my face, and raise my eyes to the mirror in front. I'm almost reluctant to check, but yeah, it's definitely still me looking back. I'm 5'7", with an athletic frame, well-muscled and lean with it too. A good soldier's body. Plenty strong, but also light and flexible. I can hit hard, move quickly when I need to. It works. Jet black hair that always looks messy, even when I try to look presentable. Luminous gray eyes I'm told can intimidate or charm the hell out of people, depending on the mood I'm in. That's okay, too. A French warrant officer I once met on a training exercise said I had the kind of face that made her want to either slap or kiss me. She was cute. So I let her do both.
Not bad for a 160-year-old, huh?
Jones is still there, watching me like a hawk and joking like a soldier. I appreciate her attempt at cheering me up and reward it with a chuckle. Thanks for saying that. She nods, clearly still on guard.
Are you going to be okay now?
Her tone is light, but her eyes do not lie. She's wondering if I'm likely to flip again and start hurting people instead of walls. I tell her she's got nothing to worry about on that score. I'm not a risk to you or your team, Lieutenant.
What about a risk to yourself? She prompts.
Absolutely not. Now that I'm awake, I have no intention of sending myself back into oblivion.
She relaxes visibly at that. So do I a bit. All right, let's get your hands looked at and...
I watch her pause to touch the side of her left ear.
Yes, the commander is fine, she says. Then to me. Are you hungry?
I could murder an army for a sandwich. Wisely, I don't put it this way. Starving, actually, I just reply.
Food would be great, thanks, she relays.
You got a radio mic in your ear?
Quite similar, Jones explains, as we make our way back to the room. But actually, it's a neural implant. My personal comlink connects me to the rest of the team on a private frequency.
Can't say I like the idea of having a chip in my brain, I mutter.
Sure, although that's no longer even a consideration for us at this point. Babies are fitted with a basic implant while still in the womb. I must appear suitably gobsmacked, because she laughs. Standard routine at this point in time. Comlinks are just one of many add-ons one can connect their basic implant to later on in life.
Many add-ons? I inquire. Like what?
For example, as a surgeon, one of my links connects me to every piece of information available in my specific field, at least 1 gigabyte of knowledge.
Translate that into soldier for me?
That's something like 50 million words.
And how do you access that info?
Easy, she replies. I pose a question in my own mind, and the answer comes through as a thought.
That, I must admit, is pretty cool.
Chapter 3.
Back in the room with the rest of the group, there's no need for pretense anymore. Jones waves a small metallic wand over my knuckles. It feels warm.
Ion tech, she says. Regenerative waves, in other words.
I watch my blood disappear. Tiny cuts close up, and the skin repair itself. When I flex my fingers to test, it feels smoother than before.
Okay, I nod. Nice.
She gives William's face the same treatment, and he sighs in relief as the swelling goes down and his nose returns to its usual shape.
Ah, thanks, Kira.
Can you heal broken bones with this thing? I ask.
Hairline fractures, yes, Jones replies. With bigger breaks, we go into the limb and stimulate the natural production of soft tissue and cartilage.
How long does it take?
Couple hours for a bad fracture.
There's food on the table, and I'm hungry for a lot more. Talk to me. I invite Hennison. And don't hold back. I've got some catching up to do.
Yes, that's for sure,
he agrees. He proceeds to fill my head with what must be more than a megabyte of information. I sit and listen attentively, while also satisfying 131 years worth of hunger. On the menu today are French fries from lab-engineered potatoes, protein burgers with synthetic cheese, and real orange juice to wash it down with. What's the deal with all the fake food?
In our time, we no longer exploit other sentient beings for their flesh, Fox explains.
Great, I nod. You might find it hard to believe, Doc, but the rough Neanderthal in front of you thinks that's an excellent idea. She laughs.
Fantastic! And you're not rough, sweetie. Just new here.
Hennison talks to me extensively about the basic neocortex implant they're all fitted with, which connects them to the kick, the cloud of human consciousness. It's enough to put me off my meal. They really implant babies in the womb?
Oh, yes. That's the usual procedure for it.
So it's not a choice, is it? I remark. But a requirement? I'm wary of implants of any kind. Health monitoring chips were all the rage in my time, and many predicted that what he's telling me would become the norm, but I don't like it. Hennison looks amused. I guess I must be showing some of my newness.
It is a gift, Commander,
he assures me.
Privilege of our species,
Williams adds.
Sure it is.
I have my doubts, but refrain from voicing them out loud. Who am I to tell them they're doing it wrong? In fact, they may not be. I resolve to keep an open mind. Carry on, please, I invite. Hennison launches deeper into the story.
We were on the edge for a long time, but halfway through the 22nd century, humanity finally became a type.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?